welcome back to Just One Question. And I get sometimes to introduce and welcome interesting people. And sometimes I get to talk to people about a subject I particularly love. And then sometimes I get to welcome an old friend back to Just One Question. This time I get all three in one. So I'm so excited to have Amy Morin on the show. Amy is a psychotherapist. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. Does anybody smoke pipes anymore? But I digress. She's an international best-selling author of six books, and host of the Mentally Stronger podcast. Amy, welcome to the show, and how the heck are you?
Oh, it is so good to see you. I'm doing wonderful, and I get to come to you live from the sailboat in the Florida Keys. So life is good.
What is not to like about that? Yeah, that's amazing. Right? So, you are one of those people I occasionally think about with envy tinged with happiness, or is it happiness tinged with envy? I'm not sure which, but anyway, thinking, boy, I should have changed my life and ordered things differently and ended up on a boat in the Florida Keys. And that would have been a good thing. But anyway, I'm really glad you're here. And I'm delighted to ask you one or maybe more questions. And because you are an expert in and have written, as we said, six books about how to be mentally stronger, what mentally tough people don't do. So the things that drag us down, make us worse, and so on in our relationships and in life. Since you've written about those things, how is technology affected our personal relationships and our personal ways of interacting with the world and you know, our workplace and that kind of thing? But we're talking about here the sort of psychology of that, and how has technology affected that?
It's been interesting because I started my career as a therapist in 2002, which is just about the time people were starting to get flip phones and texting was sort of just becoming a thing. And to see what has evolved then over the past 20 years, where almost everybody has a smartphone and people are no longer really answering the phone nearly as much as they are texting. And we're using social media for business uses, but also for pleasure, and how that really has shaped and changed so many relationships. If we're talking about how people communicate, some people love to text, would rather not answer the phone, will do anything they can to not have to make a phone call, as opposed to other people love to. And sometimes there's a disconnect into the expectations of how frequently you should text. And this happens a lot with romantic partners too. And it's something that I dive into in the book, where sometimes somebody feels abandoned because their partner doesn't text back. But their expectation is, we should stay in constant contact. I'm going to tell you when I go in the grocery store, and if something interesting happened, I'm going to text you about it. Whereas the other person might be thinking, you know, I'm going to see you in 2 hours. You don't need to text me every little step of the day. So that's been a big issue for a lot of couples. And most people don't talk about it up front. Like, what's your expectation on how often we should text? And another big issue when it comes to, if we were to say romantic partners, it's the issue surrounding access to former romantic partners. An ex may follow you on Instagram and then reach out to say hello. Are you supposed to tell your partner this, or do you just say hello back? And if it's a quick conversation, do you need to disclose it? So there's a whole thing about boundaries and having these conversations up front of, like, what are your expectations? What are mine? Some people, there's no right or wrong answer. Some couples share passwords. Some people don't. Some people say that's not a secret, but it's private. And there is a difference between that. And of course, when it comes to our jobs, very similar thing. Can I post something on my social media page that I did on the weekend? Yet if my boss doesn't like it, how much would that affect my public persona? And a lot of people don't really spend a lot of time thinking about that until they get into some kind of trouble. And then, of course, during the pandemic, we saw so many people having Zoom calls with family members. And a lot of people were able to say it's not the same as meeting in person. But almost everybody I talk to say they've never really returned to that pre-level pandemic social interaction. A lot of people still aren't seeing people face to face. We know that face to face social interaction is key to our health, our emotional health, our mental health. and that we need to be make sure that we do that. But it's inconvenient now that a lot of people work from home and a lot of people say, I don't really need to go out. I got into the habit of having groceries delivered, or I got into the habit of just meeting with somebody on a Zoom call as opposed to seeing them in person. So I think all of these factors are really important to take into consideration and to set boundaries for ourselves in terms of not taking your phone to bed, which most of us do. I acknowledge I'm guilty of that often, even though we know it's bad for us and that you shouldn't reach for your phone just because you're bored or lonely or that you are struggling with something. But instead, it would be more appropriate to at least make a phone call, if not visit people face to face.
Yeah, fascinating. So I was going to ask you, does anybody actually make a phone call anymore? Because I do hear from people in the communications world that they never talk on the phone, and they use it for all kinds of things. You alluded to several of them, texting, of course, and various kinds of social media, but certainly not talking on the phone. Is there a place in that world that you're describing of sort of healthy relationships, which includes some in-person face-to-face meetings as well as the convenience of Zoom? Is there a place in that world, or do we need to make a place for phone calls? Or are they basically irrelevant? Should we either be doing face-to-face or texting? Does a phone call give us something that we can't get anywhere else in terms of relationship?
That's a good question. And, you know, I think so. Mm-hmm. And there's this study about a 7-minute phone call is all you need to make your life happy. The problem is what most of us do is you put off calling somebody, an old friend, and you only call them once a year, and then the call lasts 2 hours because you're catching up on everything. As opposed to if you called them more regularly, all you need is 7 minutes to make your life better and to become a happier person. And you don't need to give them the play-by-play of everything that you did in the past 2 years. But because we expect the call to last a really long time, we put it off and we don't do it. So a strategy can be is you just call somebody and say, hey, I only have a couple minutes, but I wanted to tell you I saw this thing that reminded me of you, or I just wanted to share something with you really quickly. And to get other people kind of in the habit of answering the phone and knowing that you aren't going to keep them on the phone for 2 hours, because then it's not as scary to pick the phone up.
Right.
But then we get a boost in our mood, and so does the other person, and we feel much more connected to them. So I think phone calls can certainly play a big role in our current relationships if we're willing to try.
Okay. So got it on phone calls. I like that. I didn't know about the 7-minute study, so that's awesome. And let's talk about texting just for a second. So net, good thing or bad thing for romantic relationships?
So it depends. So some couples find it's a wonderful way to stay connected when they're in two different places, but they have to have the same level of desire for contact. Otherwise, it can feel like a burden to have to reply to somebody or to feel like somebody's expecting something of you right away. And so I see some couples where they're like, well, if you have a problem, work on solving it. You don't just need to text me immediately and ask for my help. Try to work on it, or try to wait until I get back or when I can call you and it's convenient. So I think it depends. And I think it's important to have those conversations about what are your expectations, what are mine. And there are probably going to be certain topics that should be off limits over text message. If it's a heated conversation or if it's something that quickly gets misconstrued, to make sure that we say, well, let's do this in person. Because even a text that's fairly simple, if somebody says, did you forget to bring the milk home, or did you forget to pick up milk? Like, are you implying that I'm forgetful? Are you blaming me? Or are you just asking the question because you want to remind me? A lot of that gets lost over text message. So for couples to be more self-aware of, like, what should we not discuss over text, or how do we do it a little bit differently so that it is working better for us? If it leads to a lot of arguments, that's probably a sign that we should have some face-to-face discussions to problem solve this.
So let me ask a very pointed version of that. Should you have arguments over text? Is it possible to have a text-based argument? And in a fruitful way?
Right. I'm not completely opposed to them, because for people who struggle to communicate, and sometimes it's too intense when you're discussing something that is really difficult to discuss, our emotions go up and our intelligence literally goes down. So it's tough to have those conversations. If you are having it over text and you're able to take a minute and take a deep breath and really think, craft your reply in a way that you can think about it, it's not just the impulsive words that come out of your mouth, sometimes those can actually be much more productive than sitting down face to face and having an intense conversation with somebody in person.
Yeah, I was, I remember giving a speech to a group of folks, and the this was about virtual and hybrid life, and I was saying the possibility of text being misunderstood is so high that you should really be extremely limited in the kinds of texting you do, and certainly you shouldn't argue over text because you're just going to create more bad feeling than you can possibly solve. And a woman raised her hand, and I had been preaching the value of in-person meetings, of course. And she said, the problem for me with in-person meetings is that I'm deeply introverted, her words, not mine, and I rapidly get overwhelmed, especially if the temperature gets heated. But even sometimes if it just goes too fast, if there's too much coming at me, too much I have to absorb. And so I really value text-based communications because I have time to think about it, and I can temper the pacing of the conversation. And so I was happily imagining some wild-eyed, fervent extrovert on the other end of her text, impatiently waiting for the next one and going nuts, trying to guess what that would be. But is that... is that a possible beneficial use of texting? Some percentage of the world is going to do better on text because they can temper the flow and have time to think about things?
I think so for sure. I know if I'm in a meeting and things are really, lots of ideas are flowing back and forth, it may not even be emotionally charged, but there's lots of stuff going on. Sometimes I forget to like, really zoom out and look at the bigger picture of like, wait, why are we doing this? Or, but so over a text message or even an email chain later, I can think about it a little more logically, like, okay, I think this is a good idea. And here are 3 points I think we should include, or 5 reasons why we may not want to proceed in this same fashion. And I could just make more sense of it. When we put things on paper or type it into our smartphone, a lot of times our logic goes up. You can think more clearly and see things a little bit differently than you can when you're just sitting and verbally hashing something out.
Yeah, thanks. So I'm keenly aware I've asked you way more than just one question, but I can't resist one sort of final one. And that is that since the pandemic, but before that, the trends were in the same direction: loneliness and depression and all kinds of measures of mental health, many of which have to do with our experience of community or lack thereof, were on the upswing, accelerated by the pandemic, perhaps maybe coming down a little since then, but still, one would say, in crisis level. What do we have to do to address those kind of issues? And is there any way to do it? Or are we just a victim of societal trends that we can't control?
You know, I think part of it is those societal trends, but I think we all have the ability to take back our power and say, you know, what do I need to do to manage my mental health? Fortunately, the pendulum has swung a bit. We used to think of everybody as either being mentally healthy or mentally ill. Now we talk about it more like, oh, there's things you can do, preventative strategies, things. It's more like a gym. Yes, I can every day choose to build mental strength. And there's choices that I would make that can prevent a lot of health problems instead of just thinking it like either you're doing great or you end up in the hospital. There's a lot of, that's a continuum. We all have things we can do to move up and down on the continuum on a daily basis. And I do think connection and community is one of the keys. We know from all the research that having a supportive community of people helps with symptoms of mental illness. It helps prevent a lot of mental health problems. And it's not just enough to be around people. I think sometimes people assume if you join a club, your loneliness is cured. But to be surrounded by humans is not necessarily the cure for mental health problems. It's really connecting with people that you can talk to and communicate your struggles with as well.
Lovely. And thank you, Amy. I would go on for hours talking to you because it's such fascinating stuff and you've got so many insights into it, but it was supposed to be just one question. Thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show and for answering more than one. And everybody go out and get one of, or several of, Amy's books, because they're full of exactly what she was just describing, which is practical techniques and ways that you can avoid being cast from the mentally healthy to the immediately mentally ill territory and do things like going to a gym where you can work on your mental health and improve it. So highly recommended. Buy one of her books today. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks for having me.